Salutations, everyone. This is ACCCS. This is Bruce, and I am the control operator for the Limar Technical Net. Going strong for 44 years now. Every Sunday night at ACS, we sit in front of our radios, and we tell each other new information. We learn from each other, and we... learn each other and meet each other and hopefully have a good time. Once again, I know for coming by tonight. Let me try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second and I will turn to the usual link. Okay, if you want to meet via email, that'd be either for full mail bag questions that are not available during the technical net or you have within radio distance. If you still like to ask questions, and on you for listening to our audio stream that we provide, or the archive audio that's provided on radio.media. Of course, if there's a topic in the news that you're familiar with, like the curious review with us, or if you have a TechNet puzzle, we have a TechNet puzzle for tonight that I hope people enjoy. I hope I have an opportunity to do it. Sometimes you run out of time, but if you don't run out of time, I think you'll find it interesting. I did. Or if you want to be in touch with Paul, any of the information is provided at the email address, mailbag@ccs.com. Also, if you want to go directly to Paul, if you have a question about NASA or a space-related story, his email address is spacechamber@gmail.com. I will offer throughout the week, I find interesting articles, YouTube and such, and I collect them together on a page for links. And by typing into your browser, roy.acccs.com, that'll give you those links. They're available 24/7, so you don't have to go today or tomorrow or next week, and go on. Just type in roy.acccs.com, and you'll get there. We have a chat room. It's been rather quiet for a couple of weeks. It's available by typing into your browser, chat.acccs.com. And as I mentioned earlier, we have an audio stream. I set it up primarily for technical matters. Some people ask me to keep it live the rest of the week. So if you're curious what's going on Glen Oak, I have a stream that's on the internet. You can type in intertechnet.acccs.com, and you'll be able to see Glen Oak stream. And as I mentioned earlier, my ACCJI has a great archive site. He has collected Limar technical nets that go as far back as September of 2006. And that amateur radio testing had over a million viewers, so making a million and one. So that's the link. So John, for a second, I'll be back to tell you what we got planned. Okay, we're going to ask for questions of tech nature. I hope that the first few will be amateur radio related, but as everyone knows by now, that we pretty much any science technology topic, just because this is a amateur radio repeat and an amateur radio net, I would prefer the first few questions to be amateur radio related, but we'll accept all takers. And sometime, hopefully, in that period of time, when there's a pause, I'll give you my little Limar technical net puzzle. It's not exactly amateur radio, but it is incredibly close to radio. And it's something that I just didn't upon or anyone told me about, but I had to actually research it for my own little project. So hopefully we'll have time for that tonight. That should take us to about 10:15. Paul WS2N will bring us the SpaceNet report. That will take us until about 11 p.m. and I will return and hopefully tie a bow on everything and wish you well. So that's the plan. If computers and repeaters and all kinds of things continue to work the way they're supposed to, which hopefully they will. So that's the plan. I will now ask anyone out there if they have any questions or comments or topics, so hopefully we're going to amateur radio, but we accept again other science and technology questions. So anyone out there with them, please hit that push to talk. It'll be your call sign. You've heard me. whether it's a question or a comment or a comment.
WQCG, Ham Radio, and AI.
Very good. Rich recognized. Anyone else want to put your name on the list for tonight? Looks like we're going to have loads of time for the Technet puzzle. Except the Technet puzzle is not going to take 2 hours. It's just done. Okay, Rich, you have two topics. Hopefully, by the time you're done with your two, someone else will pick another one. We'll see how things go. What's your question for tonight, Rich?
Okay, good evening, boys. Let me turn off echo for a second. I'm on video. Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I hear you fine.
All right. Well, it's a combination of ham radio and AI. I wanted to ask you how neural networks work, because that seems to be at the center of all AI. But then I decided to type into ChatGPT a question which I know the answers to, but I just wanted to see how it did, because it calls for a judgment. And the question was, which end is better, a Yagi or a Dipole? And I would like to read, hold on a second, I would like to read what how it responded, which is sort of interesting. Let me let it drop a second. ChatGPT says, choosing between a Yagi and a Dipole antenna depends on your specific needs and circumstances. Number one, Yagi antenna. Yagi antennas are directional antennas with high gain, meaning they can focus their signal in one direction, making them suitable for long-distance communication and improving strength in a specific direction. They are commonly used for point-to-point, whatever that means, communicating, such as in television broadcasting or amateur radio. Two, dipole antenna. Dipole antennas are omnidirectional, meaning they radiate and release signals equally in all directions. I don't think that's true. A true statement. They are simpler in design and typically easier to set up. Dipole antennas are commonly used for short-range communication, such as in Wi-Fi works or shortwave radio. You let it drop again. So if you need to communicate over long distances in a specific direction, a Yagi antenna might be better. But if you need coverage in multiple directions or simplicity in setup, a dipole antenna could be the preferred choice. Well, there are a couple of mistakes here. Since they radiate and receive signals equally in all directions, that's not true. You just have to look at their radiation pattern to know that's not true. And it says dipole antennas are commonly used for short-range communication. Not true. Such as Wi-Fi networks or shortwave radio. So, can you comment on how ChatGPT did it?
Okay, I would give it either a solid C-plus or a B-minus. It kind of hit the... If you went to Wikipedia and you read a couple of words, you'd probably do as well. Generally speaking, a dipole is not perfectly omnidirectional. It's much more omnidirectional than Yagi's are. Yagi's have much higher front-to-back and gain, whereas... And at best, the theoretical gain of a dipole is 2.15
dBs, which is not much of gain. So it's much more, omnidirectional than the Yang's. They kind of simplify concepts. Radio sets are not always point-to-point contact. Nets are not point-to-point contact. So if you are the net control operator for, say, an HF net, it probably is not a good idea to go on a Yagi because you can select a subset of your net listeners who will hear you. So it's a broad generalization. I get something terribly wrong. Most Wi-Fi's that I'm familiar with don't use center-fed dipoles. They use the quarter wave verticals or embedded antennas in circuit boards and such. So not a great score. But look, the ChatGPT is a lot, quote, smarter and air quote, than the generative graphic generation software. About 6 months ago, I put on my link page a whole bunch of images that I have produced by typing in, show me a picture of a Yagi. And generative graphics do not understand what antennas are because the images they gave me look nothing like Yagi. But, like I said, if I'm in a generous mood, B minus, otherwise a C plus.
Could you give it a B minus when it makes the statement dipole antennas are commonly used for short range communication? That's objectively false.
Okay, well, if everything was correct, I'd give it an A. So obviously, I don't think much of it is for a certain program or for someone who's never heard of antennas. Who had about 5 minutes to thumb through Wikipedia, I think they would have done a reasonably similar type of a job. But I haven't looked Wikipedia lately for those topics. No one should take your information from ChatGPT. It's designed to be conversational. It's optimized to be put, not to be correct. So don't cite law using it. And don't do anything that's important using it. It's toy at this point.
I wonder if ChatGPT-4 would have answered this any differently. The conclusion, I would give it a C minus on the conclusion. As you said, I was asked on the Wi-Fi work and/or shortwave radio. I mean, that's what amateur radio is, on HF band, shortwave radio. So it put that in the dipole category rather than the Yagi category. The neural networks come in both in its findings of what a Yagi, the definition of what a Yagi and what a dipole, what they are. But where does the neural network part of this come in? Even though facts aren't there, aren't all right, it's still very interesting how they came up, how ChatGPT came up with what it came up with. It's fascinating, actually. So, at the core, as far as I understand, are something known as neural networks. So, could you explain neural networks?
Okay, once again, kind of doing this on the radio without any illustration is kind of problematic. Neural networks mimic the way brains work. Our personal computers, our laptops, our desktops, even our cell phones, don't use neural networks for the most part. They use serial architecture, von Neumann architecture. I think he wrote articles about it in the 1950s, where one thing follows another thing. And you can multi-process across different cores and become more efficient. Neural networks are how brains work, where we have billions of nerve cells that are connected to other nerve cells. And the feedback mechanisms, some are positive, some of them are negative. They respond to different types of stimuli. They can be trained over time. When we're first born, we have 10 times more nerve cells in our brain. As we learn the world, a lot of those nerve cells die off because they're necessary to make any connections. So when they're not used, they're just kind of, run down and go away. The premise theoretically is, one activation can trigger positive and negative feedback according to some training, which can trigger others, which can trigger others. You really build a very big, real, physical, architectural neural network in silicon yet. So what happens is we simulate those types of connections through standard transistors that we can put on silicon in central processing units. The types of semiconductors used for graphic acceleration are more efficiently able to simulate a neural network. What you do is, especially with generative, is that you take data, you kind of make it a little noisy, you push it into an algorithm, you get out a response, you compare the response to the original non-noisy original data, and then you feedback adjustments to algorithm settings to get closer and closer to the original data before you introduce the noise, and then try to get the data back again. So it's kind of a black box. It requires a lot of data to be input, and then you just have hope for the best, unfortunately. You have to curate the data, because if you curate data that's basically racist, you're going to train your generative AI to be racist. That's what happens repeatedly. When you allow other people to train it through their actions, people tend to play games and play racist and such, and so you have racist AI. So that's just the very, very top of it. I mean, the people have gotten PhDs on the field of neural networks and generative artificial intelligence algorithms.
What do you mean by noisy data?
Okay, so you have a picture of a puppy. It's a cute puppy. It's a very nice, cute puppy. But you want to teach this algorithm to detect a puppy when it's more difficult to detect a puppy. So you introduce noise into the image. You distort it in some randomized or pseudo-randomized way. Then you give the algorithm the destroyed image, and you're trying to get it to reassemble it as close to the original as possible. Now, you have a copy of the original, and you can simply the settings on the algorithm repeatedly until the output matches most closely the original noiseless input. So you have to introduce some kind of noise, because the whole automated process requires that you compare it with the original. So there's an original, there's a damaged original, and there's a comparator, and then there's algorithms to adjust offsets that can be hundreds or thousands of different settings in this particular algorithm.
Okay, they say at the heart of neural networks is very, very advanced math. Why is math involved? Isn't it, and or equal to or not equal to? Where does the high-level math come into it, do you know?
I'm not sure what they're exactly alluding to, because again, math is intrinsic to all programming, and without mathematics, and different methods of artificial intelligence, I assume, require different mathematical tricks. The big AI thing this year has been generative AI. It originated in works of Google. Google had one of the earlier artificial intelligence groups, and they issued some very seminal papers on generative AI, which uses this kind of looping data stream. You might need math, but you also need a voluminous amount of data. You know, you need terabytes of source material that you distort and then change the adjustment levers on your algorithm to correct. So without all of that input, you can't train it. The algorithms and the math don't do the training. Running the data set for as long as you can possibly do it is the thing that really programs the generative portion of AI.
How do they scrape this vast amount of data? There's controversy about using YouTube. They transcribe YouTube videos and take the data, the resulting transcription. But with the YouTube agreement, as far as I understand it, what you put on there is copyrighted by you. So they're actually using your copyrighted material, not only from YouTube, but from the publishing world also. That's why Google... I read all this in Wired magazine recently. That's why Google was thinking of buying Simon & Schuster. Because it's better to buy, you know, the whole publishing company than it is to negotiate book by book, you know, copyrights.
Okay, I didn't read that article. I think they still have problems because I think authors have rights well as publishers. So no matter what's going to happen, generative AI is going to generate hundreds of millions of dollars to lawyers. It's always about the lawyers for copyright infringement. There are a lot of very dubious practices. You generally hear about the legit practices, like big companies can afford to lease information from information wholesalers that hold copyrights on things. And there's no real copyright for text on the internet for the most part, so there's a lot of playing around with that. And there's a lot of other source material that's clearly copyrighted that no one told the engineers, so they loaded it up in these generative AI. So copyright infringement is going to be the major form of attack against AI, these days. You know, who knows what form of artificial intelligence might develop after generative AI, but generative AI needs to be trained on a lot of source material, and most source material in some way, shape, or form tends to be copyrighted, so they're going to have problems with that. But, you know, they have very, very wealthy lawyers who get wealthier and wealthier doing very good jobs covering companies' backside, so I assume this will hit you.
Yeah, but how do they prove most of it? Because, you know, this article, this answer to my ChatGPT prompt, that's what they're called, by the way, everybody out there. When you type in something that you want to know or you want ChatGPT to answer, that's called a prompt. So the Indian Dipole answer, you know, they may have grabbed that from a copyrighted book on RF. You know, who knows where they grabbed it? How could they prove where they grabbed it? or defend against a lawsuit that said that your answer here to Rich Rosen, you used copyrighted information. I mean, that's got to be virtually impossible to answer. I guess just put in a prompt like, you know, did Sinclair Lewis write fairy tales? And, or what else did he write? And they come up and you drill down and you drill down and you drill down, they could get, you know, they could see more easily if stuff, you know, specific sources. But you're right, the lawyers, what a field to go into now. You know, any kid in law school, you know, is thinking of going into AI. Well, it's called IP, actually. I just went blank on IP. It's just, you know, protected material, intellectual property. That's the field that every kid in law school should go into now, intellectual property.
Well, yeah, you never know. I mean, it's always good to get really good credentials and very, very good connections, and there's a lot of poor lawyers out there. I think most people with law degrees don't even practice law, so there's a big difference between well-paid lawyers and unemployed lawyers, unfortunately, the lawyers. It's very problematic. How do you prove it? You can't kind of disprove a negative. What happens is people are going to show you where these artificial intelligence are asked something, and they somehow come up with a direct quote from a copyrighted piece of material. Like, you have it to generate some art, and the generative art is 99% identical to to original work of art by a human being. So, you know, they're going to have to hunt and peck and look for people who snitch on these AI companies in order to kind of prove it. A lot of times it's going to be very iffy, and that's what juries are for.
Yeah, just as Donald Trump. Do you know how they scrape this information from the internet? They send out these bots, yes, but I guess they have a way of correcting them, you know, like, I don't know, go to Wikipedia and just download everything that Wikipedia has under the title Radio Wave. Is that the way they do it?
I don't think they have to do it that way. It's not that difficult to scrape information from the internet. You can, can do it. I have done it. There's free software available. You can point it to a website, and it'll just kind of do a data dump. It'll look through the file hierarchy and find the types of formatted files you're looking for. If it's graphics, they'll look at the different graphics types. If it's text, they'll look at the different text types. And they'll just do a massive data dump. People do it kind of all the time. And other people protect their websites against things like that. And it's a never-ending.
In this article in Wired magazine, they said that, you know, Google, Microsoft, OpenAI, and all the other companies that are scraping data from the internet are only like a year and a half to 2 years away from completely run out of, 2.5 years away from scraping all the information they can from the internet. And they're going to have to start looking elsewhere for it, because with all these companies scraping this information 24/7, you know, you eventually run out. you eventually run out. So, God, but what a mind-boggling. The whole thing is mind-boggling. But I'll send you this article where it said that, you know, higher mathematics is involved in neural networks beyond a certain point. So, and I wonder how many Wall Street companies are trying to apply AI to picking stocks and scalping the stock market. I'm sure they're pouring billions of dollars into PhDs in physics and in... I wonder if you can get a degree, an advanced degree in artificial intelligence. Or is it still the same old data processor? Anyway, that's what... let me ask you something that completely has nothing to do with what we're talking about. And it just slipped my mind. You see, my age, I get into a conversation more than 15 minutes and then the whole thing melts down. All my neural networks come crashing down. But anyway, I think of it, I'll come back to you, Roy. Thanks.
Okay, well, let me just kind of put my 2 cents worth on some aspect of what you said. Again, networks is kind of, they've been playing with that for about 15, maybe 20 years. These little tricks that they come up, like generative AI, have kind of revolutionized things, and so it's what kind of spurted activity the last few years. So the really big problem, as I see it, and it's been commented in the literature, is that as time goes on, there is more AI-generated crap, if you pardon the expression, on the Internet, and it's not really labeled. So what's starting to happen, apparently, is AI is now sucking up AI stuff, and it's kind of feeding on itself, which never ends up well. So artificial intelligence might get kind of weirder here and stranger because it ultimately starts to feed on a significant amount of AI-generated gibberish that it's created itself. So that's more of a problem than just running out of stuff. I don't know how much stuff is not on the Internet yet that hasn't been digitized. There is never-ending, ongoing things where people are scanning all kinds of text and putting it into computer language and uploading it to different websites. So, that's not that much of a problem, but this feeding on its own nonsense is probably going to be a very problematic thing. Yes, Ed.
I am putting down the W2EAD challenge on AI. When AI comes up and figures out how to create a sustainable liquid fuel, I will bow as gentlemen.
AI is not at this point self-aware. It does not have ideas. It does not have invention. It simply has been taught by endless repeated rote how words connect other words. So it's just stringing together in a statistically probabilistic, positive way. And occasionally that leads to complete hallucinations and nonsense. So if you're expecting AI to invent something, it's going to take a very long time.
Well, it's just rice and wires in a box.
It's a toy, and like many toys. And it's a clever toy, but it's a toy. And people kind of depending upon it for a lot of different things is vaguely amusing to me at times and troubling at other times. But And, of course, the guys open at OpenAI, over in OpenAI, are threatening that there is a true artificial intelligence algorithm out there waiting to be announced that will once again revolutionize artificial intelligence. The stuff we have now are more like sophisticated toys. Whether they have something in their back pocket that'll scare the heck out of me, I don't know.
By the way, did you recognize my last one?
What do you mean?
Light and wires in a box.
Nope. What is it alluding to?
Edward R. Murrow, 1954. After the end of the Armey-McCarthy hearing, when Murrow played a large part in it, he said television is a fascinating medium, but without proper programming, it's nothing but lights and wires and fun.
He was a smart guy. These are all tools, as I've said before, and no doubt will say again. All of these things are tools. You can use them constructively, and God knows you can use them destructively. So, yeah. The same thing with AI. Good old Elon's AI is really garbage. Grok. Apparently, Grok told people on Twitter /X that the Iranians had bombed Jerusalem October 7th. So, I don't know. AI might be the end of us in a completely different way than people who are afraid of Terminator think. It might just mistake us into World War III one of these days.
Did you see where Elon said that he's no longer going after AI self-drive algorithms for the general public just for taxi cabs?
Six of one, half a dozen of the other. He doesn't have it in the first place. Yeah, he doesn't have any new models of cars, so he can't. You know, the Cybertruck is a disaster, so he's not going to sell the Cybertruck. The Chevy is a disaster, he's not going to sell a Chevy. Roadster is dead. And the low-cost electric vehicle that he promised to compete Chinese has been canceled because he couldn't afford to do it at the price that the Chinese are throwing out cheap exploding electric vehicles. So the only thing he has left is his robo-taxi, which won't work because he doesn't really have self-driving cars. Without real self-driving cars, you can't have a robo-taxi. Unless when he probably presents the robo-taxi, its feature will be a driver who sits there and drives the car. So much for the robo-taxi.
Can I give you another WB2-related challenge?
Finally.
2 months ago, I'm driving along, and I come across all kinds of confusion. The police have blocked part of the road, and they had green cones, and you had to go around the troublesome area, and there were flagmen, and they had to go this way and that way. No problem. Plus, man and a half. What automatic truck cars are going to do with that? My challenge is when they give me that one, then we'll talk.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, auto-driving cars have been a major disappointment. The reality is it requires a lot more than the industry is ready to provide at this time. Elon kind of shot himself in the foot, which he seems to often do, by making effective, you know, decreasing the cost of manufacturing his Tesla cars. He removed most of the equipment needed to have evidence of auto driving. You can't just use cameras. They don't give you distances. They're not perfect. You know, the LiDAR got taken away, and all these much more expensive, sophisticated detecting devices were removed from the car. And even with those devices, it seems to still be very, very difficult to get an algorithm to run correctly. So, unfortunately, I think that self-driving cars are going to be like fission reactors. They'll be here in about 20 years for the next 100 years. But who knows? We'll see. But I mean, Elon is just a con artist. The only way that you can maintain the exorbitantly inflated stock value of Tesla is as a tech stock, as a automobile manufacturer. So he has to kind of keep making it seem like a tech stock, which it isn't, it wasn't, it won't be. But, you know, we'll see how long it takes everyone to figure that one out.
Boy, I remembered what I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, right. I think he doubled. You think he doubled with someone else? Who is it? Someone else?
WB2EAD has a comment about your last name.
Right.
Okay, Ed. Feel free to comment, and then we'll get back to Rick.
Yeah, we're all confused, and I forgot. Turn it over to Rick.
Okay, I'm sorry. Rich?
Yeah, it's about the eclipse. You know those sunglasses that optometrists give you after they dilate your pupils? Would those be okay for watching the eclipse?
No. I do not recall the exact optical neutral density factor for solar eclipses. I would not substitute them with just dark glasses.
Right.
Yeah. Frank?
W2LVQ with a quick comment, if I may.
Yeah, sure.
Fascinating conversation. Fascinating conversation. Especially about the about Elon Musk and his cars. There's never going to be a true automated driving car until every car and vehicle on the road is truly automated, because they all have to know exactly what each one of them do for any one of them to really not run into another. But fascinating conversation, and please don't look at the sun with any sunglasses. If you want to, the best way to see it, if you want, is make a pinhole camera, which is a piece of paper with a pinhole in it, and let the sun shine through it, and look at the shadow on the floor. Other than that, watch it on TV. But anyway, great conversation, guys. I'm just going to go back to listening mode because it's wonderful. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome, and thanks for your participation and your kind words. I think probably auto driving programs will be optimal when everyone drives an auto driving car, for the reasons that you gave. You could approximate probably a safety margin below that of human-to-human interaction, because I, as a human, can't figure out how a lot of other humans' brain work. So we suffer from that same problem that the AI would have unless all of the driving devices were AI. So I think it's reachable. I don't think we have the technology and the expertise yet, but I think ultimately at some point or another we will. And then I think once we reach that point, the insurance companies will drive up the price of human driving cars so high that most people will have auto driving cars and will have the situation that you theorize.
To put it a different way, is cars will have to be able to communicate with each other to truly put the self-driving car.
Well, they may not. Yes, Ed?
I'm going to use a very strange one. ADSB.
Care to explain?
Yeah. Effective January 1st, 2020, air traffic control is done ADSB, which is a new package radio variant of air traffic control, where every plane broadcasts the information that air traffic control is. her and send that link to our house and have a couple of digital networks so you can see on the internet red language at all times. But there's a station feature. It's called ADS-B out. Put it out today. ADS-B in is you receive the data and automatically a computer processes everything it receives. Now remember, this is a tremendously long range. You don't need a very high-gain receiver. You want a very broad geometry receiver, but not terribly sensitive, because you're only looking over a fairly short range. And it processes the data from all the surrounding airplanes, including the CS-4, warns the pilot of what's going around, and it warns them loud and large when it's getting worried about its possible impending collision.
Those would certainly be very useful. Whether that's the optimum, probably not, because unfortunately cars don't only have to interact with other cars. They have to interact with topology, highway, street, and human beings and dogs and cats and anything else is not going to carry sensors with them. So it'll improve some safety aspects, but it's not the total package. It's a very complicated problem to solve. Yeah, I got some kind of an echo going on. Anyway, I think it's doable to one degree or another. It sort of depends what degree will be acceptable, because human people driving can be very dangerous. What is it, about 35,000 people die every year due to motor vehicle accidents?
I don't think it's that high, but you're in the ballpark.
Yeah, so...
Take a look at ADS-B Exchange.
Again, I think this is just his attempt to keep the stock prices up because electric vehicles have kind of peaked. The sales are going down. The Chinese are flooding the market, and this is the kind of the one ring he uses to rule them all. Stock value of Tesla drops back to a normal value of one-tenth, and so much for the richest guy in the world.
Yeah, Ed, the website, I don't know if you heard it okay, is ASBExchange.com. It's fascinating.
Right now. Well, about AI for the foreseeable future, people are pouring billions of dollars into it. Anyone who's had any expertise in it at all are being offered enormous job options. With the major companies that are looking into it, and this is, if it ever burns out, it's not going to burn out for at least another 10 years. So I hope no one's annoyed by AI too much, because it's not going anyplace. It's going to stick with us for a while now.
I think more than just stick with us, I think it's going to be the foundation for all computing going into the future.
Okay, well, that's what the hunters are hyping, and again, I see the limitations of present generative AI. They're fascinating toys, but a little more. I wouldn't depend on any of it. I wouldn't do what Michael Cohen and ask a ChatGPT to cite legal reasons for things and then submit them to the public, find out that ChatGPT hallucinated a lot of those legal cases, that they never existed. So don't depend on ChatGPT, at least 4 or 4.5, or not even probably the soon-to-come 5.0. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done.
Yeah, ChatGPT 3.5 is a toy. But 4 is much less of a toy, and 5 is coming. And all the legal publishers, like LexisNexis and all the other ones, they're going to come out with their own specifically designed legal AI systems. And so will other companies are using it now in customer support. And one company said they could fire or let go 700 customer support agents and use, you know, AI in their place. It's going to get pretty scary.
I don't know if I'd exactly use the term scary. It's going to be annoying to me. I already do not like to talk to synthesized voices and very typically simple AI that has listened to phrases and typed your message into a slot someplace and gets it wrong only about 70 or 80%. And the problem is that business is not really trying to improve their services. They're trying to decrease their costs. So if someone comes to them with a product that's 10% of the time correctly, but costs 3% of what they're paying, they're going to jump at it. So it means that the automated artificial intelligence will be more annoying to all of us, and we'll all have to figure out ways of getting it to us into an actual human being, which will become increasingly difficult. But we'll see. Technology can help, technology can hinder. I think artificial intelligence will do equal portions of both.
Comment.
Yes, sir.
You won't be able to tell the difference between an AI voice and a human voice in 6 months.
Okay, so to comment, before they comment, I brought that to you people earlier, a simulation of my voice, the reflections and such, inflections and such, were a little bit problematic, but I agree. Eventually, visually intelligent generated images will have 5 fingers instead of 3 or 2 or 17. They'll get better and better, and at some point, more and more people won't be able to tell the difference. That's inevitable. What did the person who wanted to comment want to say?
Thank you, W12. You with a comment about AI putting people out of work. I had an interesting conversation last month with a fellow who said that most butchers are worse because everything is done now by AI. You walk into a large retail store, all the cuts of meat are made by robots and AI on an assembly line. They don't have butchers in the back of the store.
Yeah, we had a gentleman, I don't see him on the Echo Link. He lives in Florida about a month ago, I believe it was John. Mentioned that he's basically a retired butcher because they automated his entire job, which is it curious and weird because I thought food processing is kind of the last bastion of immigrants and underage children, child labor and such, and it's still going strong. I remember during COVID and such, there were a lot of forces keeping their slaughterhouses running despite the high infection rate.
Well, it's just, just everybody sets the spec. It's going to put a lot of people out of work. What the heck they're going to do, I don't know. I have no idea. I guess we're going to have a generation of people that are trained to do the computer work, but the AI keeps running. Although, supposedly, the AI is going to be able to do that itself also. So, I don't know what happens, but I think I would have checked out way before the outcome shows itself. And I'm going to turn it back to you. Thank you for allowing me.
WZ2 comments on some notes.
Yes,
sir.
What
about AI?
Dallas, Fort Worth, to LaGuardia, flying over to your house.
I don't know why, Ed, but someone seems to want to jam you.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I don't understand that at all. You're the least likely person I would pick to want to jam. But you want to try it again and see if we can get it through?
Okay. That's basically AI privileges.
Okay, your friend was doing it again to you. I'm sorry to say it. I just wanted to mention the previous comment. Yeah, unfortunately, since the Industrial Revolution, there has been a never-ending automation of everything. And the bosses have saved money on mechanization. That's what kind of gave us the Luddites, who are probably still alive and well, and then trying to get hurt. And it's always a matter of retraining. There's always more jobs, at least in the last 200 years, because the service industry expands, productivity expands, so money is a little bit looser round and round, and so service industries and other things and software design and artificial intelligence programmers are worth their weight in the gold. The problem is eventually there'll be a time where everything is either a robot or artificial intelligence or both. And then what do you do with a population? You either have to put them all on the dole or basically imprison yourself so that they don't grab you and kill you and eat you. What the future brings. And I agree, we'll probably all not worry about it when it happens, because I don't think it's going to happen anytime too soon. But it's the basis for more than a few good science fiction novellas out there. You?
I just want to preface it by saying that the benefits of AI have been astronomical in the interpretation of the And another radiologist, no, I think it's not important. It may help. The question is unrelated to AI. Someone mentioned to me that there's something called Claude of Rhine. I've never heard the term, but I'm told that you can access all the types of numbers and patients and all of the work. You know anything about that?
Yeah, I overheard your conversation with Charlie. Charlie, usually out there someplace. Are you out there, Charlie?
Yes, Roy, I'm listening.
Okay, Charlie, can you give us the spelling of that site? Because I tried to find it myself and came up with nothing.
Give me a couple minutes to find it.
Okay. By the way, Stu, you were asking about how Ken does his magic. There are enough cell towers, I understand, and he drops away. While you were trying to talk to him, he dropped out of one cell tower and had to wait until he was on the road to another cell. So he's just using his cell phone. He's using EchoLink as an application on his cell phone. It's not that magical.
But I just find it incredible that this type of service is available and provides communication no matter where it is. I'm flattered. I'm not using those coverage.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of government motivation to kind of put up as many towers as they humanly can to kind of even out, you know, the rural, you know, there's a never-ending federal policy of paying companies to wire up small rural areas and such. So although it's not perfect, as demonstrated by Ken when he drops out of Echolink, because he does do really regularly, I too am surprised with the enormous number of cell towers in this country to maintain cellular operations. It's a $1 billion industry. It's probably reaching $1 trillion at this point.
Well, the strong guys in the red and it has been well for a while, but it's grown. The number is but I still feel that it's actually rapid. I've never asked those
well, sometimes the government and industry does things sort of right. But the trouble is kind of they're chasing their tail, because as they expand the number of cell towers, they're going higher and higher in frequency, which is making their free path loss greater and greater, requiring higher and higher density cell towers for fifth generation, someday sixth generation. So, you know, eventually it seems like there's going to have to be a cell tower every 20 feet from next to each other, you know, all covering the entire United States. I don't know if that's how many trillion that costs, but so the kind of two forces with cell towers. So one is to get reasonable low-level contact across the country. The other is to be able to run at very high frequencies of generation of 5G operating cell towers for ridiculous wide bandwidth that we've discussed many times before.
By Charlie, as you have done, I've texted to Google Lord O'Brien. I have a message from Charlie.
Yeah, Charlie, are you there? Yeah.
Roy, I found it.
Okay, do us all a favor and spell it out slowly.
B R O. A G C A S T I F Y, and then M O B I L E.
Okay, I'm a little confused. Is there a dot any place in there?
No. No dot, nope. No, nothing.
So, is this a website?
Yes.
Okay, every website needs to have an extension. It's usually .com, but it could be almost anything else. It could be .net, .blog, .not a lot of things. So, there's got to be a .something.
I don't see it.
Say it again, please.
Okay. Charlie, can you say it again for someone who asked? And while you're saying it, I'll type it in and see if I can figure this out.
Ready? Capital B R O A G C A S T I F Y.
W2LVQ.
Yep.
So, phonetically,
Pacify.com.
Can you come with it phonetically just to make sure? Because there's a possibility we'll miscouple.
let me help you, everyone out. The right website, I believe, is www.broadcastify.com. That gives you the Broadcastify mobile home. So I think that's what Charlie is alluding to.
I believe so.
Charlie, this is Roy.
You're welcome. I'll take a look at it later on and try and figure out what exactly it is. There are a lot of services that offer streaming of local radio sources. We have our own around here. I forget exactly. I think it was W2LIE.net or something. It includes streaming of this repeater, and it has some fire departments, police departments. And there are lots of apps around that lets you log in to these things. I once found a cell phone app that let me hook into West Coast repeaters. And the West Coast is very different than the East Coast. Some of the repeaters on the West Coast are the most foul things that the FCC found years ago, but they do seem to exist out west. But there are a lot of services that allow it for different streaming services. So, you know, just Google away and you'll find all kinds of interesting things to listen to. Anyway, any other comments on this particular subject? Yeah, you're welcome. Let's do my TechNet puzzle. It seems like a perfect opportunity to do that. And I have gentlemen like Ed listening in, and I would love to hear what they have about this, whether they find it interesting or terribly boring. Recently, I decided that I'm such a nice person to me that I deserved a present from me. So I bought myself a new watch. I like watches. I'm not an enormous fan of mechanical watches because mechanical watches, even at the best, tend to have something like 10, 15 seconds plus or minus. I like quartz watches. I realize that you can buy them very inexpensively, but I found ways to spend a little bit more. Recently, I saw this lovely citizen watch. It's called the Tsukiyomi 18. It is a perpetual calendar solar-powered watch that sets its clock, it sets the time, it sets the moon phase, it sets the day of the week, it sets everything using WVB. Yeah, WVB. So it uses WVB.
WVB is on the West Coast.
I think the 60 kilocycle time standard is designated BB.
What's this for these things? Man, hurt, bump his head.
I use both. Anyway, so there's a little problem with that. You want to guess what part of the United States is least covered by the time standard transitions out of Colorado? Well, close. It's kind of the East Coast. Matter of fact, a decade ago, there was some talk among them that they were going to put in a secondary station on the East Coast, someplace around Alabama, I think, was the idea. And they were going to use a different frequency. The WWBB uses 60 hertz, 60 kilohertz, and they were going to use 40 kilohertz because the Japanese standard also uses 40 kilohertz. But for study bureaucratic reasons, that never happened. And so Brooklyn is not great for WWBB. I bought a somewhat expensive atomic clock wall unit specifically because it was supposedly a very sensitive front-end receiver, and sure enough, that is the only atomic clock I own that actually thinks by itself. So my clock does, my watch, my new shiny new watch does not sync. I put it on the windowsill. It didn't sync. I put it above the lower frame of the window because the lower frame had screen windows that were there. So I thought maybe the RF was being blocked. So I put it above that portion of the window. It didn't sync. So I asked you brilliant amateur radio operators, is there a solution at hand? Is there a way that I get my lovely citizen watch to synchronize despite this limitation, other than, you know, taking a flight to Colorado and just waving it around?
US2N, did you leave it overnight?
Yes. The way it's designed, it automatically checks for the signal at 2 a.m. So I left it on the windowsill all night long for about three nights. Yes, AOP.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Ivan, QOSOCLFOPUMPUM. The guy with the blue bandana. I have the same problem. Maybe it doesn't end up well in Brooklyn. It certainly doesn't work in Queens as well. I have it by solar powered shot. Which are with the same amount of things called an hour and cycle, just out cycle. What helps me is I usually put like that. There I are on a bracelet. And it kind of helps to, I think it helps, because I get things per week that fall in.
Boy, I do so.
Okay, first, let's hear from that guy who just kind of commented. He doubled, so I didn't make out his phone, and then we'll get to you after. Well, he just quit, so try again.
All right, this is Cookie Beans. I have a citizen with a similar problem. And as it turns out, the antenna inside the device, and this is a watch, a wristwatch that I wear on my wrist, is actually very, very directional. And I found that I have to aim the stem of my watch at the source of the signal. In other words, I have to figure out the angular bearing from where I am to where Boulder, Colorado is, and that's almost due west from here, and orient my watch that way with the stem pointing that way. Otherwise, it doesn't sync and there's not enough signal. So I think it may be the directional pattern of the receiving antenna of the watch. Over.
Well, that's a good point. It differs from model to model. My particular model, according to the station, has it oriented at the 9 o'clock position. And I tried that. I used a western opening window, so west, not east, north, or south, and I pointed the 9 o'clock position directly westward, and it still didn't sync. Comment? AYI. Yes, comment, please.
Hey, good evening, everyone. This is Patrick in Bell Harbor. I don't have a direct solution, but I know at one point a couple of years ago I saw a project out. I don't know if it was ever finished. A guy was working on essentially what was a relay, a GS relay, that emulated the WWDB code at 60 kilohertz, very, very low power for exactly this problem. So the idea was put your unit in the window, it gets GPS, it syncs itself, then it puts out the time code, and then local devices can sync to it. But I have no idea if it ever went anywhere.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, you know, I kind of thought, I ended up doing a lot of research. I was thinking about either just setting up a ferrite loop that was mentioned earlier, to kind of collect as much of the 60 kilohertz electromagnetic waves, and then just kind of concentrate it close to the watch case, or a repeater that just kind of recycled the signal and generated
the helicycle signal. So I kind of thought of all those things. Ed, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, just off the top of my head thought, a random length wire antenna terminating a loop, and you just put the clamp, you just put the watch in the middle of the loop, hooked up to the wire, foot strike.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to what I just mentioned, that, it's just kind of a kind of mediocre antenna to concentrate the electromagnetic waves and then present them much more locally in a cluster around the case. Any other great ideas?
KD2WOT. Basic as him.
Yeah, this first. I think I mentioned this to Chris earlier today, so don't give it away.
Well, you did mention it, but I don't think you ever really explained what it was. But I was wondering, would the does the phone number work?
What do you mean the phone number?
Well, there's a phone number to basically hear what you would hear on the broadcast.
Okay, I'm a little confused. WWVB doesn't have an audio signal. It just has an amplitude-modulated time code and a phase-modulated time code. The higher WWV stations at, 20 gigahertz, 15 megahertz, 10 megahertz, those have an audio in addition.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Rich?
Yeah, why don't you build yourself a mini Mac loop and then hang it in the middle of the coupling loop and then try to turn the Mac loop in different directions. But it would be only about, 2 feet in diameter, something like that.
Again, the problem... Yes, LVQ?
On the website, I'm reading what to do if it doesn't work. I'm sure you've probably been through all this, but one passage here is very interesting. It says that if nothing else works, take the clock outdoors at night, power it down, put the batteries on, plug it, then power it again to force it to look for the WWVB signal. It doesn't work outdoors. If it works outdoors, but not indoors, you probably have a local interference problem inside your house or building. If it doesn't work outdoors at night, probably best to return it and try a different model.
Okay. In particular, this watch has a lot of nice little features, and one of them is I can force it into listening for the time code anytime that I want. It's a couple little presses of a button, so I don't really have to take batteries out and kind of void the warranty and all kinds of terrible things to force it to do that. And probably if I wanted to kind of take it, well, you have to keep in mind that the best time for the time to reach in Brooklyn is middle of the night, so that's why they set the clocks up to automatically do it at things like 2 a.m. So I still have to kind of get up in the middle of the night, traipse to a hill, and hit that button, which might be effective, but with a real pain in the back. Yes, Ed?
Somebody mentioned local interference. Only plus from your house, the X-ray on local there. No, seriously. Is there a manual override to listen to WWZ at 10 megahertz on the receiver and manually program it?
You can manually set the time, and you can base the time you're setting it on any time standard that you want. It's a bit convoluted and annoying, though, but it certainly is an option. You can manually set the time. What I'm trying to figure out is a scheme
to be able to just sink it in some relatively simple manner.
LVQ.
Yes, LVQ?
I'd also say that you should locate the watch or clock at least 1 to 2 meters away from any computer monitor which can cause interference. Some monitors have a scan frequency at or near the WWDB carrier frequency of 60 kilohertz. Just for a thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thought, but like I said, it looks for the signal at 2 a.m. 2 a.m., I'm asleep, televisions are closed, and, you know, it's sitting on the windowsill. So there's nothing I could change in that manner to get it to work.
That would
If that would drive you crazy, the solution to this problem is going to drive at least a few people listening tonight crazy, because it sounds ridiculous, the answer.
Oh, I got to stand by. I didn't know there was an answer. Thank you.
I do see something on the internet about plans for a GPS to 60 kilohertz spectrum.
Oh, okay. I didn't go deeply into that. That struck me as a little bit more esoteric than I was looking for, but this is more of a demonstration of how stubborn I am, that I will bang my head up against the wall until the wall crumbles. But someone brought that up earlier. I don't know if that really exists or that's just one's clever idea, because the solution is ridiculously simple. Yes, ALP.
Yeah, maybe try to wrap it overnight this device.
Okay, I kind of get the idea that you're kind of using just metal as an antenna system. You might benefit, you might not. I don't know. I buy the steam pipe. Probably the steam would come up in the middle of the night one night, and I would fry my lovely little citizen watch.
Old water pipe.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's 6 to 1, half a dozen of the other. I mean, the secondary thing that I would have eventually tried had I not solved it would be to coil a lot of wire together and just move, some kind of antenna. Possibly a long length going out my backyard or something. But again, like something ridiculously simpler.
Maybe
watch is effective.
Maybe.
WS2N.
Yes, full recognized. I just want to mention that since I solved the problem, I did synchronize the watch, so the watch is not broken. Paul, what did you want to say?
Do you have a plastic, maybe coffee can? Put the in a can. Put it outside in the backyard somewhere or up high, out away from your house somehow. Maybe that would help. It would have to be a plastic, not a metal can. You've got a Faraday cage. Back to your room.
Yeah, I was going to present this at one point. One was going to offer you kind of A, B, C, and D, and one of the choices was going to be dangling it out the side of my house. I did not do. I could only come up with two ridiculous methods, and I wanted it to be an A, B, C, D type of a thing. But yeah, that was certainly that other option. A little bit of a pain in the backside, and what happens if it rains overnight?
A plastic coffee can, Folgers. I got them all over the place. I use them for painting.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I'd be a little concerned that just having my shiny new watch just kind of dangling out my window. But yeah, it certainly was something into mind. Someone else had an idea or a comment?
This is Paul's point. So those coffee cans are virtually waterproof. So that's the one.
Okay, I don't know if they're virtually waterproof, but, you know, you never, you know, we get pigeons, we get squirrels, we get all kinds of things. It's just, I don't know if I particularly would sleep soundly knowing that my watch is sitting in a can outside on a string.